forces irregardless of the extremely previous lastly, talking about act finding is an existing facility. We believe that before approving new programs or suspending current programs, really take a look at what ICOS has and what we have out there. If you look at the cost of starting a new program, sometimes it's $60, $70, $80 million. How many students can fund in a program by expanding the current one for doing a partnership with a private institution? As I said earlier, it's very cost effective because you've got private sector doing all the infrastructure costs. And then lastly, I think it really behooves us in the state knowledge to determine if it's a critical workforce program area for one of the public institutions. They want to expand the program, and that should be considered as well. In closing, talking about meeting current future demand, and that was one of the goals of the task force, is remember our sector. What the most part is for-profit. It's for-profit. Expansion of program is limited only by demand. If you have to step up the plate in any areas, normally we can because capital expansion is funded by private investment. We're able to react quickly and to the needs of industry, and we're willing to work as closely as we can with the department as we all move forward to meet these needs. And so, Chairman, thank you for your confidence.
Any questions, Mr. Good? How many of the 850 institutions that you represent are for profit?
Probably 95.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Take it off, Joe. Like a doctor's waiting room.
Four backgrounds have common kinds of barriers that are against them that are not just financial. college with backgrounds where their families, nobody ever attended college, and they don't know how to jump through the loops. So financial aid becomes part of the issue. Programmatic approaches like the college reach out program that reaches them and embraces the students and brings them onto our campus and universities and community colleges and helps them overcome those barriers are critically important. So the food, I think the report has done a good job of focusing on. Let me add another perspective on the data that keeps getting batted around too in terms of how many people we think are coming to the system. I have a different point of view than my good friend and colleague Larry Hagel on this. I actually think that the numbers we're working off of are extremely conservative with the improvements that we're seeing in both the high school graduation rate, the continuation to post-secondary education, and there are strong trends that we see in our community colleges and universities. Of the most recent high school graduates, I'm convinced that that's going to continue to increase from the improvements that we're seeing in our high schools. But even if that doesn't, folks, that's only one minority of the population that we are serving. The adult population that we serve in our community colleges and most of the universities and the for-profit and proprietary sector especially is an enormous growing part of what we're serving and going to need to serve to help people have good careers and jobs, to help our economy progress. So all the indicators of what's happening with changes in the workplace, the lifelong learning, et cetera, it's clear to us and what we see in our colleges that the need is going to be even more, and consequently, all the options that are on the table that we have been talking about are necessary in order to prepare and give access to the who, the kinds of students we're talking about, to the what, and what kinds of programs that we need in this state, specific programs that we target on, and where they are, the geography that all of us have talked about. I also wanted to make sure to emphasize the fact that I think that 90% of what we have been talking about, we all agree on. The media, unfortunately, keeps focusing on the few disagreements that we have, I think very unfairly, instead of talking about the things we all agree on. We do, in fact, have the best articulation and partnership with our universities, public and private. I agree with everything Ed Moore said. Our private universities are doing a phenomenal job of working with us in partnership. We're working on a new, enhanced, more robust articulation agreement for them so more students can transfer to them. Chairman Roberts, I know your board just reaffirmed the articulation agreement as our board has for our community college students going to our public universities. It is nowhere better. It's not even in the same ballpark as it is in Florida, and that's going to continue. The partnership with our universities, our college staff are tremendous. I attended a recent one with the University of Central Florida and community colleges in the area. They're working extremely well. The area that we need to make sure we do highlight, a couple of you brought this up, and I'm looking over the side of it. The biggest opportunity for all of us for access is the student preparedness in our high schools. The High School Reform Task Force is working right now on these issues, will improve this more than anything. The role of career education, career paths, career academies in our high schools to embrace a population of students who have no desire or interest or understanding of going to college right now is critical for us. It is a significant part of our high school population. There are technical centers that our community and our university can embrace and help as we move them more into the area. I'm going to resist the urge to give suggestions on universities. Even though there have been hand given on community colleges by some of our university colleagues, but I will pledge to you that we will match any accountability standards that our university partners would like to be involved in. In terms of need-based financial aid, we have a specific need-based financial aid fee that our institutions charge. 75% of every bit of that goes to need-based financial aid. In terms of retention, obviously, again, we lead the nation in terms of retention, and we need to do better, and we're working harder on it. We all are in higher education, but we think we're doing pretty darn good by trends and by comparison to benchmarks of other states. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Armstrong?
I have a couple questions, Mr. Armstrong. We talked quite a bit about having to modify Bright Futures. Is there a sense as to if it should be modified? modify for these things. Is there a percentage that we should be looking at to say 30%, 25%? Is that an appropriate way to look at it when we talk about modifying for these things?
I would tell you that right now, statutorily,
So the fact that it says there is, if there are any data on page 135, we are there and we'll take a look at that at some point. So if any questions, as I say, I simply wanted to assure this committee that we were, in fact, aware of the issue, aware of the fact that we do not have a full look at it, but we are taking measures to ensure that we will have that. Any questions? Well, let's take a look.
It's 10:30. Can we be back here at 10:40? And we'll keep going with public conversation. Thank you.
Higher ed and the University of Miami, where I received my PhD. So, it seemed to me one way to do it was to take 12 years of retrospective data, that is, every single person, mapping transcript, the GPA, to enrollment in the SUS, law residents only. So, I looked at that for 12 years, and then projected out 12 years. And then said, what if we improved 10%? What if we improved 25%? I did my very best to backtrack and verify data by matching the transcripts to the students' public reports of GPAs. I looked at four populations. First time in college. First time as an undergraduate in college, any age, any year of high school graduation, entering the SUS. The reason I did that, you might remember Jay's report, when he was tracking a cohort in 1999-2000, about 2,900 students showed up that weren't in that high school, the prior high school graduating class. So by looking at any age, any year of high school, entering the SUS, and those ages varied from 16 to almost 70. Community college transfers entering the SUS, and other transfers, leaving ICA, going out of state, coming back, and then just using Jay and I have the exact same data after all. So, this is the total number of students entering baccalaureate programs per year. So, you can see that in some ways it looks healthy, about 75,000 students. If we run that out, you're talking about prior. You're averaging about 1,700 new students entering baccalaureate programs per year, and now go to about 2,000 if nothing else changes. 10% increase will run it up to about 2,100, and a 25% increase will run it up to about 2,400 per year. That may or may not sound large to you, but if you look at private universities, the average private university in the United States only has about that many students. So it's actually a pretty good number. So if we look at just the 10-year window that y'all have been talking about, we're looking at about 1,700 new baccalaureate students. That's coming from community colleges, from high school, from all sources, best we can track. What about the differences? I think we've now identified both of them. The DOE table showed 83,000 in the SUS. The student data course file matching individual students showed 60,000. The 22,000 is probably mostly grad students coming into the SUS. ICUP, I don't know where that difference is. Since Jay and I both have the 14,814 grad recipients for that particular year. So if you look at it, the projections, if you take out graduate students and try and take out those other 10,000 students, there is no doubt that the appendix I'm not going to go through, I'll let you look at it at your leisure, and that I think you're going to be surprised at some of the data because it's both encouraging and discouraging. A big issue has got to be getting more people interested in college, and especially high-performing academic students of low socioeconomic status. All students in Florida and across the country have a terrible graduation rate from undergraduate school. And over the past 15 years, the graduation rate for every group of students, unfortunately, has decreased nationally. But it's particularly bad for high-performing low socioeconomic students. They just do not do well. So how can we help? I think a lot of advising and a lot of taking care of issues. You know, one of our jobs on this side of the microphone, and I have a little bit of time left, so I'll allow you know, is to represent our sector. I have to say, as a public citizen, that it is a little discouraging that you all seem to be representing your sectors. And I thought one of the ideas was we have a huge demand in the state of Florida. We have a demand for vocational training, for truck drivers, for mechanics, for community colleges. Huge demand. And I think there's
plenty of money in this state. I think it's time we stop talking about how little money there is, we can't do this, we can't do that. You can look, talk to any number of people on both sides of the aisle, and there is the money if we have the will. But we have not yet stepped up with the will. You all have that opportunity now to put aside your sector differences, come together and say, what do we really need to meet the needs of Florida citizens? Everyone seems to have a damn agenda as they move up. We're supposed to have the agenda over here, not you. You all are supposed to be coming together to meet the needs of students. And I know it's hard. Hell, I can't do it. But you need to find a way to step back and ask the question that Ms. Bradley asked about funding. I mean, there are all kinds of ability to do it. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I'm very confident in the numbers I just gave you, since they're tied to human beings walking across campus. Ms. Rose?
In the lower socioeconomic area of first-time college students are AA transfers. Does the tracking system help? Does that help a student who's not accustomed to the university or college environment?
Our experience, as I mentioned at the Board of Governors meeting, is that it takes more than that. And I know it sounds a little expensive. We have 8 full-time people who take our 300, what is now 1,200, 4 years worth, take our highest risk students. And their only responsibility is the well-being of those students. Because of that, we have a 90% retention rate, and the graduation rate of those high-risk students that's equal to the overall student body. So, I think a good deal is hiring academic advisors. And right now, there's lots of them. They're very inexpensive. I believe in letting the market sort these things out. So if I can hire them for $27,000 a year, they don't stay long, but they care about students and do a terrific job. And they look after the well-being of those students. They kind of keep an eye on them. We have homework centers so they can come there and see other successful students and interact. It's very time-intensive, and it's not cheap. As I mentioned, we put $1 million and scholarship just for the 300 students for that first summer.
Any other questions? Yep.
No, sir.
Whose money are we supposed to believe in? Presented us?
I believe that you'll find that Jay and I have been working together, and I think, I don't want to speak for Jay, but I think from what he just said, that the baccalaureate numbers, you would find us pretty much in agreement. Now, the community colleges serve such a range of students in so many different ways that I don't feel comfortable in trying to sort that out. I'm only talking about those students seeking a baccalaureate.
Dr. Evans, you gave a terrific presentation on the massive efforts that Florida State does in terms of outreach, in terms of trying to reach underrepresented groups to come to Florida State University. I was wondering if you could give me some examples, citric examples of things that College of Education in Florida State has done to increase its number of students that enrolled in the college.
Well, last year we lifted all caps on all enrollments and all teacher education programs. And anyone who meets the state minimum standards for teaching are being recruited and encouraged to enter the program. You know, if you want to make things move faster, and I get rid of NCATE, and I get people outside of the colleges of education to actually outline the curriculum. Now, I'm wise to let NCATE come in here and set standards of the state of Florida.
Interpret that.
Pardon? NCATE is the, I call it a thing, but
the Council for Accreditation of Teacher Education. It is the national accrediting body for teacher prep programs.
But they have too many restrictions, I think. I mean, if you look at the prerequisites, whether it was the 3 prerequisites that you have to take before you can enter the program. It just doesn't make any sense. I think we can do a lot to streamline it. We're also doing Teacher Preparation Institute every year, and we are recruiting and opening. We're offering classes outside of Florida State University or other sites, and little city outside of in Liberty County. All of those things trying to improve, but and when you pile on a bunch of prerequisites that don't seem to have a connection to improving students learning in the classroom, what's the sense?
Any other questions? Thank you so much. I think the answer to your question is that the role of this task force is to increase access, both demand and capacity. And I think the good part about this work in the sales force is if nothing else, we're going to end up getting everybody to reconcile the data. So public policymakers can have the right data and be more inclusive than it ever was. As far as I'm concerned, ladies and gentlemen, what I've heard this morning probably makes all of our effort worthwhile just for that, because we'll make better informed decisions going forward. Dr. Furlong? Tom Furlong from Pittsburgh College.
Thank you. I want to thank Pittsburgh College for the 4-year programs and the Harry University Partnership Center. We have three other coaches here today, Hermione Day, Chipola, and from Oakland to Walton. And I'm going to try to cover as much as I can for all four of us, and then maybe we can ask if they can't come out of town, if they have something I missed, they could address it, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to take a few minutes on why we're taking this option. You need numbers like for 47 out of 50 for baccalaureate, for BSA, we're 46, but Pinellas County was also 67 out of the 67 counties. So when the legislature looked at this option in 2001, similar to how you're looking at it, and I want to really thank you for the time you've all put into this, they asked St. Petersburg College to be kind of a pilot and go out there, and our statute's a little different than the others in that it says we are to do BSN nursing. Any teacher ed major and any AS degree we have, we can do the Bachelor of Applied Science. So we have 15 majors at the Perkins College now, and there's a handout here on what those are, and I won't take the time to do it today. But when we looked at that with USF, what we could do about it, it's already trying to get the other way. So when we looked at this with USF, we decided to do a multi-color contract. When we looked at this with USF in 2001, we supported doing more in distance learning, and in distance learning, which is one of your recommendations, we now have 16,000 students, and we have the most courses and students at any university or community college in the state in our distance learning program. And it has helped us tremendously, but we still have that low of 67. The other thing that we tried to do at St. Pete College, I just want to mention briefly, is our University Partnership Center. We now have 15 colleges, 5 of the state universities, 5 of the private colleges, the ICUP schools, and the others from out of state in our partnership center are doing 52 majors. And we have all the way to the University of Florida building a building on our campus for pharmacy and dental to psychology. And typically what we're trying to do in the partnership center is do the gen ed, liberal arts kind of courses, psychology, anthropology, sociology. Our community needs that. We don't need to do it. We need to have a university or private college come in and do it. We have 4,000 students in that program. We're very supportive of it. On the other hand, we had this tremendous need in teacher ed, nursing, and IT. So our first three programs were in those areas. Since then, we've been looking at the niche baccalaureate, ASBS. You'll see on there areas like dental hygiene, orthotics, and prosthetics. These are majors that we look to the universities. There's only 3 or 4 dental hygiene bachelor's degrees in the country. There's only 3 orthotics programs in the country. But those are ones we've chosen to do ourselves. Let me use orthotics as an example. That community came to us and said, because of diabetes, because of war, we need another program beyond 3. We went to USF. USF said it's important, not in our mission right now. We got with them, saw federal dollars for them to do the master's and the PhD, for us to do the bachelor's. It worked. We're doing that together. We're the only center in the country with all 3. We're not competitive on this, but it's something where we can take AS degrees in physical therapy assisting and other programs that we have to the rest of the general education that they didn't get in education without extension at the upper grade, and have these graduates that are needed in our area. Not in a competitive way. The 15 programs that we have in here have all been, I'm not going to say USF is our cheerleader or anything, so I hope they are, but all 15 were run by USF, and we actually have them sign off that it's not something in their mission they're going to do. Then we move forward to the internet and see what other programs in the state nursing system are available in these areas or from our ICA partners, and they get a shot at it. And if they can do it, and they can do it in a cost-effective way locally, they really come in and do it, we back off on early childhood education, for example. That's going to be a high enrollment program in our area. But USF Lakemont have a program already in place for that. And so we've asked them to come in, and we won't do it. But in areas like, again, like dental hygiene, it's just not something they can engage in a cost-effective manner. So having distance learning and the partnership and a strong branch campus at USF, along with our limited baccalaureate, is our local attempt to get on this program. I want to mention finance real briefly. What's in the bill that's moving to the legislature and what was in the bill that was created for us is basically whatever the university system gets at the upper division to instruction, we would get 85% of that. So we looked at our most recent numbers, and you know, some of the early numbers that were for the past month are very high because it showed our year that we had those students, the one chart, the other chart showed our first year. But our students are catching up to our numbers because our administrative structure is in place. And in the 2004-05 year, the 725 FTE, our cost per FTE was 9,596. This year was 1650 FTE. Our cost is 5709 for FTE. And what we want in the future is we want 85%. That was derived by saying that the research component is not in our program, so we can do it for less. But we need to build higher PhD faculty in this program, so 85%. The other thing our statute said was we would be paid on fees somewhere between the SUS fees and the community college fees. We picked the number right in the middle. That's worked good for us on access. And then finally, I just want to mention a comment was made this morning about need-based financial aid. We strongly support your recommendations there. And since 1980, the community colleges have a dollar for SDE and it's gone up over time for need-based financial aid. So we do that already. We think it's wonderful if the SUS picks that up. That would be terrific.
$25 million, and this year we'll do a little bit over that, and generally that increases by 10%.
might be, but as best I understand, in the state system, that might cost as much as 75% of that from taxpayers. Our funding is totally private, and that cost of operating also goes up about 10% a year. We right now have 5,000 students. What our students pay to receive our education is for an associate of science, for an associate science degree is $43,000. That's two academic years, so that's about $21,000 per academic year. For our bachelor program, $64,000. So per academic year, it's about $16,000. So it's not inexpensive, but in terms of cost of living, I think it's kind of in the ballpark. We fund it, again, not a nickel from taxpayer money. It's totally free to the taxpayers. We use Title IV funding. We actually try to minimize that. You'll probably be surprised at that number. Only 34% of our funding comes from Title IV, which is $64 million last year. And non-Title IV funding is $126 million, 66%. And of that 66%, 70% was funded by private lenders like Bank of America and American Express, because they get such a good result with our students without government guarantees. They're not afraid to do that. Our default rate in the Title IV program is in 2003, which, as you know, is the current year, is 5.2%, and our retention rate for students is 90%. We have very strict academic and attendance standards. If a student misses 10% of the classes, they can't pass, and if they do that twice, they're out of school, and we give them back their money if they haven't completed 50%. But we really believe that's important. That's it.
Not to find a point, but isn't Title IV money public money?
Yeah, it is, but when you pay it back, it doesn't cost the taxpayer anything. If you pay it back with interest, and that's what our students do.
Those are
some of those are Pell grants, though. That's a good point. Small percentage is Pell grants. But I'm thinking about the taxpayers in Florida in terms of the public model, which is an excellent investment in Florida, to pay for the capital for a public university and to pay maybe 75% of the operating costs. I can't imagine anything better to do as an investment with our money. But the point I think Cecil was making is asking to support is if there are places where you don't have to do that because the needs being met, then why do that? And that's an excellent opportunity to save money. So I guess my thesis would be the numbers I just showed you are numbers that you can use for something else, because we're doing this with a private fund, which there's no need for the taxpayer to spend the money.
Tell me a little bit about the history of your school. I'm not familiar with it.
We started 26 years ago as an audio engineering school.